lies. He must despise all the what fors and whys, the way he lies and he lies and he lies. And he lies and he lies. He just lies and he lies and he lies and he lies. He can lie any time, he can lie any place. He crosses his fingers, keeps a straight face. He lies and he lies and he lies. Too many believe him, they're bleating like sheep. Accomplices now in the liar's deceit. He lies and he lies and he lies. Lies, lies, lies. He pokes us all in the eye when he lies. I'd like to ask him to stop all his lying, but he just, he lies and he lies and he lies.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where he bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Today is just 2 weeks before the election. Before the real election Tuesday, and some Americans, in fact, are voting now, and the campaigns are going fast and furious, working hard in that last desperate attempt to convince that last undecided voters. And as the music has let you know, the campaigns are taking some liberties as they describe what each other is thinking. I think they understand the real secret of the campaigns, which is that more people are voting against the other guy than for their candidate. I will concede, as someone who's a lifelong Democrat and a big supporter of John Kerry, I think he'll make an excellent president, that there's no question that my disgust and my distrust of the current president is stronger than my like of John Kerry. And there are plenty of Republicans that will tell me and have told me that, well, they don't think Bush is the greatest Republican president ever. They will cite Ronald Reagan. Maybe they prefer John McCain. But they sure like him better than that wishy, flip-flopping liberal John Kerry. So both campaigns are out to characterize and to caricature the other guy as being some awful person, and neither is afraid to use the L word. No, not the word liberal, the word liar. And that's why I have this song that's been playing in the background, He Lies, He Lies, and He Lies. And that's why today we're going to have a special Liars Election Tuesday. My guest is going to be Tom Robbins, state chair of the Utah College Republicans. He's been on my show many times. He's a terrific frequent guest, and you've probably, if you've heard this show at all, have heard my debates with Tom on a variety of topics. Well, Tom and I are going to try something very difficult for both of us. I don't know how long either of us will last, but we're going to try to represent the other side in the debate today. We promise you a debate on Election Tuesday between liberals and conservatives, Republicans and Democrats. But today, left is right, black is white, and Tom's going to defend John Kerry and attack George Bush, and I'm going to defend George Bush and attack John Kerry. It won't be easy for either of us. Tom will be gritting his teeth, and I'll be trying to staunch back the nausea, but we're going to try to represent the other side. Partly this is in fun, and partly this is because I think it's important to try to understand the mindset of the other guy. What is the other person thinking? So if you want to call in, you can represent your own views. You can represent someone else's views. I don't much care. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, and you can participate in this special Liars Election Tuesday. Tom, you ready to try this thought experiment here?
Let's tell you what, Mark, that theme music, He Lies and He Lies and He Lies, I haven't heard that since the Clinton years. I don't know where you dug that up, but it's been a long time since I've heard that one.
Well, the author is a guy by the name of Yikes McGee, the composer, I should say, and he did compose it regarding the current administration, but I want to try to switch gears. I want to try. Now, this is going to be hard for both of us, like I said, so let's see how long we can last. And I guess I'll start by saying, how could you possibly support this liberal, flip-flopping, wish-washy guy who apparently shot himself in Vietnam to get out of the war and then came back home to attack comrades in arms and cause them to be in POW camps for longer? How's that for a start?
Look, Mark, obviously it's not flip-flopping. It's thoughtful consideration. Now, I would do while we're doing this, I would love to do a John Kerry impersonation, but I just can't speak slow enough and condescending enough. I just haven't figured that out yet.
But oh, try it.
It's thoughtful consideration. I look at each issue like paint drying on a wall. It takes me a long time to make up my mind. And, of course, you know, whatever way the wind's blowing that's drying that paint is going to help me make up that decision. So it's not so much that I'm flip-flopping. It's just that I had a run in a very competitive race with fellow Democrats. A lot of issues were brought up. I've never challenged some of my issues before, but I think 40 days before the election, I finally made up my mind, and I think I have a plan. I know I have a plan. I have a plan to get us out of Iraq and to solve the world's problems.
Well, I'm George Bush, and what's that, Karl Rove? Are you whispering in my ear? Yes, yes, I'll do whatever you say, Carl. Yes, God gave me the right to be president of the United States. And ever since that time, I've been sure that whatever I do is always right. And that's important because one has to be right. And are my 90 seconds up yet? It's a hard job that we have to do here. And I will stand firm against terrorism. And we're going
that's
to attack.
Probably the three biggest mistakes that you've made in your administration.
Well, mistakes. See, mistakes. I don't make mistakes. To make a mistake would be mistaken, and that would be a mistake, and don't underestimate me.
Let me tell you, you just had to go my route. You just have to go my route, Mr. President. Look, now you're having all these problems with fundraising and where you're getting your money from, and people are asking questions about Halliburton and what that. I had a fundraiser that raised me almost $1 billion, and I only had to say one line. You know what that line was? I do. Okay, that's the way you need to do it. All right. I'm married to Teresa. She's a wonderful woman. She's the sparkle of my eye. She's my inspiration. And I tell you what, that was the biggest fundraising event I ever had. And that's what you need to do. Get out of the Halliburton stuff. Get in with a sugar mama. All right. Laura's nice. She's sweet and everything like that, but she doesn't have the money to be able to bankroll your entire presidency.
You know, you have all those Hollywood people helping you, but I represent the heart and soul of the America, the guy that gets up every day, meets before a board of directors, makes $100 billion the honest way through government contracts, and you don't represent these common people. You represent the Hollywood types.
Well, that's an insult, I think, to all Americans to say that Whoopi Goldberg, Alec Baldwin aren't the American people, all right? The Dixie Chicks are just like the girls next door, for crying out loud. I cannot believe that you say that.
Well, the other thing I just got to say is, I mean, you are liberaler than Paul Wellstone, than Ted Kennedy. You are a big spending government liberal. You want to spend trillions and trillions of dollars, and you want to tax everybody. You want, in fact, nobody to earn anything. You want to make everybody put all of their money in one huge pot and tax it and tax it and tax it and give it to I don't know who. To one of your nasty programs that you really can't define. That's your problem.
Oh, that is completely untrue. I'm going to raise the taxes on just the wealthiest of all Americans. Believe me, me looking into the camera last night had nothing in comparison to the "read my lips, no new taxes" mantra. So, you know, nothing to be compared to at all when it comes down to me trying to get reelected. I'm sure I'm not going to run away from that statement.
Yeah, but God supports me.
Let me tell you.
God supports me. You lose. God supports Bush.
I'm telling you what. I'm going to raise the tax on the wealthiest Americans, even though that my wife just disclosed that she just paid 13.5% in her taxes. We're going to have her paying more because she needs to be paying her part. Don't worry. We're all going to be paying more taxes.
Well, you know what I think is particularly bad about John Kerry is that here he is consistently the most extreme liberal ever, and then he's inconsistently wish-washy and switching positions all the time. So this is such a severe danger to our country because he is consistently, inconsistently consistent, and that's a real problem for our country.
You have to understand. Well, yeah, I'm not wish-washy. See, when I was back in Vietnam, when I was on the swift boats, see, they would kind of go back and forth and rock a little bit, and I'd get seasick. So I just kind of got used to going on one side to the other, because back in Vietnam, that's where I learned all this stuff. It was in Vietnam.
I see.
I served in Vietnam. Well, I don't know if you knew that, but back in Vietnam is where I learned these lessons.
Well, you should have done what George Bush did. I mean, he served honorably in the Texas National Guard. He went at a time when no one was defending Texas. All these people were going to this country named Vietnam, hundreds and thousands of miles away, but George Bush was defending the heartland. He wasn't out on some crazy mission in Vietnam. He was defending the coast of Texas, defending real Americans, while John Kerry was out defending some kind of Asians. This was a real American, and even though George Bush decided, well, that he'd rather do some substance abuse rather than actually fly in those planes, his heart and spirit was with the mind of the Texans, and that's why George Bush is my true hero.
Well, we all know that back in Vietnam is where I learned everything. I did serve in Vietnam. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I spent 4 months in Vietnam. I was a slip boat captain in Vietnam. I've been involved with Vietnam. I was at Vietnam, and I just want to tell you that even though Bill Clinton was off smoking pot and he became the commander in chief, I wasn't going to do that because I think my experience in Vietnam, because I did serve in Vietnam, will be able to help out in the current quagmire that we're in. Now, just because I told the New York Times that if Saddam Hussein is unwilling to bend to the international community's already existing order, then he will have invited the enforcement, even the enforcement if it's mostly at the hands of the United States.
I don't know if it's your accent, but we're missing what you're saying.
I can't. I don't know. You know what? Doing all the Saturday Night Live and stuff, I have not really found somebody who does a good John Kerry.
Well, I don't think I do a good accent either, but it is interesting trying to think like the other guy, or at least like the caricature of the other guy. It's a tough task. Let me give out the phone numbers. Maybe you think the two of us are just being silly today, and maybe we are. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. How do you see the other side? How do you see them as really defending their candidate and telling all these lies? What is it that motivates the other side? I'm trying to put myself in the mind of a Utah Republican, and, well, you know, Kerry is against life. He is for killing people, killing fetuses, killing everyone, not the death penalty, but killing everybody else, and he's just a killer. We got to save those fetuses because we know that if they grow up to become children, well, we're not going to be able to feed them, but we got to save them as fetuses, and that's why we need to elect George Bush. How's that?
I'll tell you what, Mark, I'm really excited, and one of the reasons why I'm excited today is because I, about 20 minutes ago, voted. So I don't know what the polls are saying, but right now, George Bush 1, John Kerry 0, I think we got it in the bag.
you can't handle...
It's over, the bell rings.
Tom, you can't George handle Bush playing is... John Kerry for too long, can you? It just, it eats up inside of you.
It destroys me. But we are up. George W. Bush is leading in the election, one vote to nothing.
Well, you know, it's in Utah. I already gave up that state. You voted in Utah. You know what? I think, and we're switching back to ourselves now, but I think Kerry's going to win. But you know what? I'm willing to concede Utah, all right? Tom, you can have Utah. We'll take the other states.
We'll give you the District of Columbia.
All right. Okay, we're 1-1. Let me go to the phones. Let's see what they think about our craziness. Maybe we've gone over the top. I don't know. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Yeah, this is G.I. Joe from Michigan.
Hello, G.I. Joe from Michigan.
Yeah, I got a question for the Republican guy.
Okay, I'll play that role for now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to know why Bush and the Republicans think they're going to win with projectionism.
With rejectionism?
Projectionism.
Projectionism. Oh, okay. Well, what we do as Republicans is we take everything that we've done wrong and we project it onto the other side. So, for example, if George Bush ran away from the war in Vietnam, we'll attack John Kerry's Vietnam service. And that way, people will get so confused that they won't really remember who was a hero and who was AWOL, and we'll just put all those issues together. So projection works very well for us. In fact, if we mess up Osama bin Laden, we'll just invade another country, Iraq, and hey, it's the Middle East, and therefore people will get confused. It'll work very well for us.
Well, I'll tell you what, from a Democratic point of view, Senator John Kerry has run a campaign which has never been run before when running for the United States presidency. Usually when a senator runs for the president of the United States, he is exposing himself because he has a long, distinguished record of accomplishments that he has done, and it exposes him to attack. See, now, Senator Kerry very carefully and very intelligently has decided in the last 20 years not to do anything in the United States Senate. Therefore, there's not really a record to talk about.
You know,
that is ingenious, and I think it's going to work for him, and it's going to put us over the top.
Yeah, that's very clever, you Democrat there. We Republicans did the same thing. We nominated a guy that had nothing but the name of his father, ran the governorship of the least important state in the country, Texas. The Texas governor does practically nothing. Never held office, but had the same name as his father. And you want to know our real secret? Some people voted for him because they thought he was his father. But shh, we'll keep that really secret. Does that answer your question, G.I. Joe?
I was confused, but now I think I'm going to vote Kerry.
Oh, don't do that. If you vote for Kerry, the Democrats will confiscate your Bible, G.I. Joe. We're running commercials.
Tom has talked me into voting for Kerry.
Tom, that's about the worst thing you've ever heard, huh?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. We will Well, we won't confiscate your Bible, but we will kick out any mention of the Ten Commandments in any courtroom that you're in, G.I. Joe. So if you go before the judge, you're just going to get executed without the Ten Commandments in the courtroom. We'll make sure of that.
Well, we're running commercials in Arkansas already, we Republicans, to let you know that Democrats are taking away your Bibles, and they're awful, awful people, and you got to vote for George Bush. Hey, G.I. Joe, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins on this Liars Election Tuesday. What's your question or comment?
Well, this is Rod from that Sin City, New York City.
Oh, that awful, awful place. It's a horrible place of abortionists and prostitutes, but when they're attacked, we Republicans come to New York's defense.
Hey, this is,
well,
this
I'd
is,
like I'd like to ask the Democrat,
okay,
so-called Democrat, I call him a communist.
Right, I understand.
What exactly his agenda is, you know, does he want 8 more years of prosperity and peace like Clinton gave us?
Democrat?
That's what he wants.
How are you going to answer that one?
I'll tell you what. Could you do me a favor up there in New York? Write a letter, send an email to Hillary Clinton. Tell her that if she could get out and campaign for me, I would appreciate it.
I know how much y'all love Hillary.
Her health plan proposal did so well back in the Clinton years. And beyond that, I got a sneaky suspicion that she wants me to lose so she can run for president in 08. I can't believe it. I need her support. I need her and Bill out in the stump for me. So if you know Hillary or Bill Clinton, by all means. Could you please get him out there? Cause
I'm very scared by Hillary. Hillary scares me. I think she's human and perhaps is an alien trying to take over my body.
What she is she's an uppity woman, and we cannot allow uppity women to have any power in the United States. We Republicans are very consistent on that.
They call it brains. I call it attitude.
I understand.
Well, at least maybe Hillary, if she won't answer my phone calls, maybe she could talk to Teresa, because Teresa, my wife, you know, she's
scared by her too,
happy,
aren't you?
And she's been going at the media, and she's been kind of going off. Now Hillary was a little snappy, nothing like my wife. Like, my wife is way, way, way more snappy than that.
Now explain this to me. Backing up here, Tom. Now, as an ex-Southerner, I got to say, why is it that? Okay, I understand when you're mocking someone. You know, if I'm mocking Bush, I can play a Southern accent. He's from Texas. But mocking Kerry. Why the Southern accent? Don't you need a Massachusetts accent?
That's the accent I could probably do.
I mean, you know, it's kind of an insult to the South when you're mocking someone. You always use a Southern accent. I had a reason, but anyway, I don't know if we.
Thank you very much, Mark. I got to go intimidate some voters.
Okay, you go do that and be a good Republican. Don't let those blacks vote. All right?
No. I can tell a Kerry voter by the color of their skin.
Exactly. Thank you very much for your call. Well, today is Liars Election Tuesday, and my guest, Tom Robbins, the state chair of Utah College Republicans, is trying his best to impersonate a Democrat. I'm trying my best to impersonate a Republican. I don't know that either of us are doing such a good job, but we'll continue on after the break, trying our best in this Liars Election Tuesday to caricature, if you will, how the other side thinks. If you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, and if you want to ask a serious question too, hey, we might just allow it. We'll be right back after this.
He lies and he lies and he lies. He looks you right in the eye. And he lies all the time. He lies through his teeth. If you pick up a rock, he'll be lying underneath. He lies and he lies and he lies.
With the election looming, George W. is back to claiming that he's a compassionate conservative. And as evidence, he cites his centerpiece education law, the No Child Left Behind Act. This is supposed to be a tough love reform, compelling all public school kids to pass standardized tests. If the kids fail the federal government's strict tests, they'll be held back, and their schools can lose federal funding and be replaced by corporate-run chain schools. But instead of tough love, Bush's law actually is a tough luck scam, for he has callously refused to fund the reform part. to get Congress to approve the law, he had agreed to put up tax dollars for smaller classes, special teachers, tutors, educational equipment, and other resources needed for schools to improve the ability of our kids to learn and pass Bush's tests. He reneged. In this year's presidential budget proposal, George shorts his own No Child Left Behind reform by $9 billion. That's on top of $17 billion he withheld in his previous two budgets. In fact, this spring, Bush offered more of our tax dollars in the form of a bribe to try to get the government of Turkey to send some troops to Iraq than he has offered to all of America's school districts to implement his federally mandated education law. By so severely shortchanging our public schools, the Bushites can advance their ideological agenda of school privatization. As more and more schools lack the resources to achieve the passing rates required on the mandated tests, a little-known provision in Georgia's law will kick in, one that encourages states to privatize schools that fail his testing system. This is Jim Hightower saying, lest you assume that private schools will be better, thus more compassionate, recent data from Bush's own education department now reveals that children in such schools are doing worse academically than those who are in our public system. Georgia's reform is not about compassion, it's about profits.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Look at the facts, it ain't nothing like that. He just lies and he lies and he lies.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Today is Tuesday, and on Election Tuesday, which we call it here on the Inside Scoop, every Tuesday we have a debate between a conservative and a liberal, a Democrat and a Republican on the issues of the day. But today is Liars Election Tuesday, so we're going to have the same debate with a twist. I'm going to represent the Republican position, and Tom Robbins, the state chair of the Utah College Republicans, is going to grit his teeth and actually try to represent the Democrats. We're doing our best here. You can call in and represent anyone you like by calling toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And speaking as a Republican supporting George W. Bush, I got to say that America will never elect a guy like John Kerry who will let France determine whether or not we go to war. In John Kerry's view, if a country were to nuke the United States, we would ask France if please we could fight back. Instead, I as George Bush will fight back against all our enemies, real or imagined. I will occupy 30, 50, 60 nations if I need a draft, if I need to bomb them, if I need to nuke them. And Canada, you're up next.
Well, Let me tell you this, Mr. George W. Bush, before we go on in this debate about liar election Tuesday, as a Democrat, could you just define the definition of a liar or what is a liar? Because we need the exact definition, because I don't know. The Democrats, we sometimes have a problem with what the definition of is or liar is, because I'm a little shady on that.
Well, as a Republican, I would say that a liar is any time you Democrats disagree with what I, the president, say, you're a liar. That's the definition.
All right. Well, that seems like because, you know, sometimes we get into these legal technicalities, and myself and a few of my predecessors, we just have some problems with some simple words like is and liar and things like that. But I want to say, you know, as far as building a coalition, I, John Kerry, if you remember in 1991, when Saddam Hussein went into Kuwait and the entire world was united behind George Bush's father, George Bush 41, and built that coalition to go in there, I stood up to that and I said no. I said I voted against going going into Iraq, because it just wasn't big enough for me. We needed to at least double the amount of countries that were with us on that one.
Well, let me get our caller involved here. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins. What's your position on any of these things?
Well, it's Dave on the Internet, and I'd like to try to get a couple of things cleared up between... Well, I'd like to talk, I guess, to the Republican, at least for the day.
Okay, well, I'm the Republican for the day.
Well, how do you explain 9/11 happening? I know that you weren't there to see it. You were reading a good book.
Oh, it's Bill Clinton's fault. It's entirely Bill Clinton's fault. Bill Clinton should have prevented 9/11. He should have stopped these guys 10 years ago. That's my answer as Republican. It's the economy is also Bill Clinton's fault. The reason we're in a recession right now, Bill Clinton's fault. The reason why we were attacked on 9/11, Bill Clinton's fault.
And the $7 trillion deficit.
That's Bill Clinton's fault. See, he led us to a surplus, which tricked people into thinking we had money, and therefore we went to a huge deficit. Whereas I've done tax cuts, which will help the economy in the future, and in fact, it's already helping it right now. So therefore, it's all Bill Clinton's fault.
Well, I was hoping you'd give me one, or maybe off the record, official... How 9/11 could have happened when we had fighter jets on standby and we received so many warnings right in advance of this.
Oh, liberal, you've been listening too much to Michael Moore. None of that's true. And if you do have evidence that it's true, well, that guy is a liar and a crook and a bad person, so I won't look at your evidence.
Damn, I should have asked the Democrats.
Okay, well, ask the Democrat.
Let me tell you now, have you seen Michael Moore's movie? Because it is 100% true. That man has no hidden agenda. He's not trying to make money. There's no reason why he'd want to twist the facts or maybe cut things out of his films and portray things in a certain light. The man speaks the truth. That's why we put him next to Jimmy Carter at our national convention, because he needs to be in an elevated spot. And one more thing.
Listen, Democrat, Michael Moore is a communist. He's Stalin.
No, he's Hitler. He's evil.
He
might not shave. He might not bathe on a regular occasion, but he's all right upstairs. He's one of the leading intellectuals of our party. And that's why we put him right next to Jimmy Carter during our national convention, because he's the leader of thought and intelligence and just concise action when it comes to the Democratic Party. And wherever he pushes his party, I'm right behind him. Howard Dean, now I might have disagreed with him, but let me tell you, Michael Moore isn't crazy.
I'll tell you, Democrat, Michael Moore, Howard Dean, all of them working for Osama bin Laden. That's why.
Well, you know what? I just wish, you know, if someone could get it, you know, I'd tell the caller. If you could get a hold of Jesse Jackson, I've told him to go out and start scaring people and telling people that the Republicans are not allowing African Americans to vote. Now, he can't produce names, and we don't really know who or where or what organizations, and anytime he's pressed, he gets a lot of flack for it. But maybe you call him Jesse Jackson and kind of spread this around, and then we got Howard Dean going around telling people how there's going to be a draft. If you want to make a difference in the last 14 days of the election, just join one of their kind of whisper campaigns and get on some chat rooms and start spreading that muck around, because we really want to scare people in America into voting for John Kerry.
Well, you're a very wise Democrat. I wish you'd ask the Republican over there why he flew 147 or so Arabs out of the country while everybody else was grounded. I think he should have an explanation for that, too. I don't know how he's going to blame that on Clinton.
Next question. Is there another question? Yes, reporter, another question. Yes. Yes, next question, please. That's my answer as the Republican. Thank you.
When I served in Vietnam, caller, let me tell you what. When I was there 4 months, I got 3 Purple Hearts. When I was there,
we respect John Kerry. And we respect John Kerry's service. We Republicans, we respect John Kerry's service. We will not in any way be connected with those Swift Boat veterans, which are proving beyond a shadow of doubt that John Kerry, in fact, worked for the Viet Cong and was shooting at Americans while he was there. We put no truth into that, but we will, of course, help them get voices out because they are veterans. They have a right to be heard.
Well, I appreciate the Republicans not connecting themselves with the Swift Boat veterans, because, by golly, I'm getting sick and tired of people telling me that I'm connected somehow with this MoveOn.org organization and these other liberal 527s and whatnot. My campaign doesn't in any way, shape, or form try to get help and coordinate messages and try to get the media out. And we always follow the law. There's no way that I've ever done anything with MoveOn.org. That's that crazy Al Gore who just kind of, you know, corked his pop and went nuts at that MoveOn.org conference and just started yelling and screaming and ranting and raving like that one Howard Dean did. I'll have nothing to do with any of those liberal groups, and there's no way anyone on my staff is coordinating with them at this moment.
Fair enough, Democrat. I don't know if that answered your question, caller, but we tried the best we could.
I think I'm going to be a lot wiser hearing your real feelings.
Well, we're going to switch back now. I think. Okay. Thanks very much for your call, caller. I'll tell you, it is hard playing a Republican. I don't know about you, Tom. I found it was like, all right, I have to think in the other way. Was it tough for you?
Well, being a Democrat, I didn't have to think. It was just hard.
I see. I see. Well, listen, it's been an interesting thought experiment. They teach us in law school you should be able to take any point of view. And I don't know. Sometimes I do think Republicans actually believe God is on their side instead of God being on America's side. And I don't know. I don't know. Hey, Tom, I know you can only be here the first half hour, so you got to go soon. But go ahead and give me any parting comments as yourself or anyone else.
Well, I just want to say, with 2 weeks left in the election, things are going to tighten. It's going to be a close race. It's going to come down to the wire. But like I said, I already voted, so I think we're up 1-0, which is very exciting. But we'll give you Washington, D.C. if you give us Utah. But this is going to be a race that primarily decided what you said in the beginning of the show is why George W. Bush is going to win. You indicated that people, and even perhaps yourself, have a greater hate for George W. Bush than they have a love and affinity to or a connection to John Kerry.
I admit it.
And I think when the curtain goes behind somebody and they step in that polling booth and they look and they realize that we're in a time of war, in a time of really a time in our history that we've never experienced before in America, I feel deep down in my heart that people aren't going to fire George W. Bush, that your side is too motivated by hate, but John Kerry hasn't done a good enough job in clearly articulating his vision or his kind of roadmap for America's future. And in the end, that's what's going to happen. And it's highlighted by I was talking to you about this earlier before the show, but when I had an opportunity to question Paul Begala on CNN when I was down at the presidential debates last week, and I asked him, I said, why is it that every Democrat that I talk to cannot name one significant or substantive piece of original legislation that John Kerry pushed through in his over 20 years in the United States Senate? The bottom line is that the Democrats, if they're going to win, if they're going to have a chance, need to better articulate the position and better come out with the roadmap that John Kerry has, because if they don't, when people get in that voting booth, they're not going to fire George W. Bush, but they're going to reaffirm him, and we're going to have 4 more years of a great president and 4 more years of a great America, and that's the way I see it.
Well, Tom, let me just agree and disagree with you. I will agree with you at the outset that most Democrats that I know of, including myself, have more disgust and distrust. I think that's a better word than hate, because we're disgusted by this president's incompetence and corruption, and we distrust him. Hate isn't really the proper term. More disgust and distrust for Bush than love of Kerry. I admit that. It's so hard, given the, in our perspective, the awful things that this president has done, because we don't happen to like war, we don't happen to like huge deficits, we don't happen to like ruining the environment and so forth. So his policies are making us more upset than our support of John Kerry. But I'll tell you this, two things. One, I think Republicans feel the same way in reverse. I don't know many Republicans that will praise everything George W. Bush has done. They're listening to the caricature of John Kerry, that some of the caricatures that you and I just articulated a few moments ago. And I will agree with you that it is important to know what John Kerry has done in the Senate. And so when I come back from break, I'm going to answer that question. You can stay on or not, Tom. I know you have to go. But I'm going to talk about what John Kerry has done in the Senate and why I think his senatorial career, totally apart from everything else he stands for, shows why he would be a good president of the United States. So it's a fair question, Tom. I don't know if Paul Begala answered it, but I'm going to answer it. It can't be answered in a few words, unfortunately, because these things take time. The short answer is his investigations of things like Iran-Contra and BCCI were extraordinary and wonderful, but I'm going to explain those things after the commercial break.
Well, I tell you what, Mark. If you spend the next 30 minutes in your show talking about John Kerry's record in the United States Senate for the last 20 years, you will have spent more time combined than the entire Kerry campaign has talking about his 20 years in the United States Senate. If Kerry's going to win, there's going to have to be more people like you who are willing to dig, and try to figure out exactly what he's done. Because he hasn't taken the time to articulate that. He doesn't talk about it. In his speech at the Democratic National Convention, he spent less than a minute and 45 seconds talking about his 20 years in the United States Senate, even though that's been the substance of his whole entire political career up until now.
Actually, Tom, I'm going to agree with you. Politically, I think it's a mistake not to mention all the things he's done in the Senate. The problem is that when you work in the Senate and you work among 100 senators, it's very hard to take a leadership role because you've got to do compromise and you've got to get people to agree with you and come on board. It's not like being the head of a state or the head of the United States where your decision makes the difference. So I agree with you. I think Kerry does need to talk more about the Senate, and I promise to do that after this break. So I'm going to say goodbye to you, Tom. I know you have to go today. I've enjoyed our Liars Election Tuesday. It's been fun. And, hey, just 2 weeks to the election. You and I will be working on opposite sides. We'll have to come back after the election, and one of us will be very unhappy. Thanks for coming on the show, Tom.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay. We're going to go to commercial break. I do want to get back to a little bit more serious, talk about some of the things we just talked about, some of the stereotypes and caricatures that each side puts on the other. And if you want to call in, the toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. And I promise when I come back, I'm going to talk about John Kerry and what he did in the United States Senate right after this.
Excellent news, Americans. U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing or right-shoring to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
Any lies, he looks you right in the eye. And he lies all the time. He lies to his teeth. If you pick up a rock, he'll be lying underneath. He lies.
Well, welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and we've just practiced a little bit of lying, myself and Tom Robbins, state chair of the Utah College Republican Party, and both of us tried very hard to represent the other side of the aisle, to represent the other side. We may have exaggerated a little bit. Frankly, I wasn't sure this was going to work, but I got some nice comments on the blog, so I'm glad to see that a lot of you think that indeed the idea worked. One of the things, though, that Tom did point out when he was being serious was that Republicans are constantly using the line, what has John Kerry done in the Senate? What has John Kerry done in the Senate? And they use it as a way to attack him. And I have to say, I think it's a fair point. I think it's a fair question. I think it's one that Kerry should answer and should answer more. Let me tell you what I've seen when I've looked at John Kerry's record. First of all, I've seen someone who's not been your typical Democrat. It is not true that he's to the left of Ted Kennedy. In fact, if you look at the statistics compiled by liberal interest groups like the Americans for Democratic Action, and I've gone through them on the website, you'll see that Kerry's votes are right down the middle of the Democratic Party. He was the median senator. Half the senators were more liberal in their estimation, and this is a liberal group, and half were more conservative. So he's a middle-of-the-road Democrat. Now, if Clinton was perhaps a more moderate Democrat, I'd say liberal. Kerry's a more middle-of-the-road Democrat. In fact, John Edwards was definitely more towards the moderate side. So that characterization just isn't true. What the Republicans use is they use a 1 year in the National Journal, the most recent year, 1993, where the National Journal had so few votes by John Kerry because he was out campaigning all the time that they actually didn't even look at two separate categories. They only looked at his economic policy, and even then he missed a lot of votes, and so they, instead of counting the absent votes as neutral, they counted them in the way that would make Kerry most liberal. My point is this. Let's talk about what Kerry's done in the Senate. One of the ways he distinguished himself was distancing himself in the 90s from the mainstream Democrats in two main ways. One is a balanced budget, and the other is welfare reform. Now, some liberals may not want to hear this, but John Kerry in the 90s broke with the Democratic Party to say that some spending was too expensive and to support a balanced budget. He also broke with some of the more left liberals in the Democratic Party by supporting Bill Clinton on welfare reform, understanding that people should have to work in order to get a welfare check, but also understanding that they need child care in the process. Another thing that Kerry was very active on in the Senate was the cops program, putting 100,000 cops on the street. Another thing that his piece of legislation that he developed is called the S-CHIP program, and it's a program for children's health care. It's a program to provide health care to children. It has been sorely underfunded by this president, but the idea of providing health care to children is and developing a program to do that is very much John Kerry's. I think John Kerry understands that it's actually not that expensive to treat children. They don't have as many health care problems, and if you can fix problems early, you're less likely to have to do emergency medicine later on. So these are Kerry's legislative proposals, if you will. Another thing that he's very well known for is when he went to Vietnam with John McCain and talked to the North Vietnamese, did some investigation, talked to the South Vietnamese, talked to everyone in the country, and determined after a clear investigation that there were no POWs left in Vietnam. He came home and he, with John McCain, very much helped to ease, I think, the pain of a lot of family members of Vietnam veterans that never came back, that there were none left there. But let me talk about two things that get very little discussion. And if you want to read a lot more about it, let me advocate going to the Boston Globe. There's a really good article. I will post it on the blog, though you can Google it, just Boston Globe and John Kerry, where they talk about his investigative skills. As I was mentioning to Tom, being a senator a lot of times means having to work with people that are very different from you. In fact, if you want to know uniter instead of divider, clearly John Kerry's in that role, because in order to succeed in the Senate, you have to be able to reach the other side of the aisle. And that's something that John Kerry was able to do strikingly well. Very few people realize that the Iran-Contra scandal would not have been investigated if it hadn't been for John Kerry. John Kerry was already investigating the Nicaraguan Contras and found a connection between them and money laundering and drug selling. And he sent out an investigation. He's really one of the main ones going in there, finding out the administration, at that time the Reagan administration, was lying. And he went to Jesse Helms because the Republicans controlled the Senate at the time. He actually worked with Jesse Helms. Jesse Helms hated drug selling, and he even hated that more than he supported the Contras. And when John Kerry pointed that out to Helms, Helms was willing to join in, because remember, you can only do investigations by the majority party, which was the Republicans at the time. They joined together, and because of Kerry getting Helms' support, they were able to do the investigation into the Iran-Contra scandal. We would not know about all the illegal stuff that Oliver North did, that Ronald Reagan did, if it hadn't been for John Kerry. And that's partly his role as a prosecutor. This is a guy who, after all, did serve as a county prosecutor in Massachusetts. And part of being a good senator is not just winning legislation. It's also investigating the administration. And John Kerry showed no hesitation in that. And one of the other things, even bigger accomplishments that I think John Kerry has, is the downfall of a bank called BCCI, Bank of Commerce and Credit International. This is a multi-billion dollar institution that supported Republicans and Democrats and was an Arab bank basically controlled by and giving money to terrorists. BCCI supported al-Qaeda-like groups all across the globe. And it also supported George W. Bush. In fact, BCCI is one of the banks that helped bail out George W. Bush when he had one of his failed oil ventures. So BCCI was one of those groups that banks that, while it was helping terrorists, was also helping American politicians. No one was willing to stand up to them. John Kerry was. John Kerry discovered the money laundering, discovered the fraudulent acts they were doing, went, investigated them, and brought down one of the leading financial supports of terrorism worldwide. He did this with virtually no credit, and I have to agree with Tom, he needs to talk about it. It's confusing. The problem with BCCI is it's hard to talk about in 10 seconds, in 30 seconds. But it's I don't think it's at all an exaggeration to say that John Kerry was instrumental in bringing down one of the largest financial supporters of terrorism and one of the largest supporters of George W. Bush, not as a candidate, but as a young failed oilman when BCCI gave him a lot of money. Read this Boston Globe article. I'm going to post it on my website. Know, and you should know what John Kerry's done in the Senate. You should be able to give these examples if someone, you know, challenges you on it. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the experiment that Tom and I did, the liars that we were. And I want to know from you how much of this caricatures are true, how much is not true. I want to read from you a number of ways in which George Bush has caricatured John Kerry, has claimed that Kerry said certain things that Kerry didn't say at all. And, of course, poor George Bush, Kerry is not living up to the caricature that he claimed he was. I think that was part of the problem in the debates. George Bush had made John Kerry out to be this incredibly wishy-washy guy that had no stands, and America was surprised when he actually did have some stands. So I want to hear from you. What did you think of this experiment? I don't know if I'll ever repeat it again, but what is it like to put yourself in the mind of someone you don't agree with? How do we best, you know, convey ourselves? It's very interesting because we hear that, I think in both Tom and me, we heard the stereotypes of the other side. And I want to talk about that when we come back. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Feel free to join in the discussion. Tell me what you think on this Liars Election Tuesday. We'll be right back.
Facts, it ain't nothing like that. He just lies and he lies and he lies.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Jesse Russell. The AFL-CIO has raised the ire of the Bush campaign by launching coordinated protests at campaign offices across the country. In a letter to John Sweeney, president of the AFL-CIO, the Bush campaign claims that union members entered offices on October 5th and injured workers, vandalized property, and intimidated voters. The letter calls for the labor organization to immediately discontinue any coordinated protest efforts. In a statement, the AFL-CIO calls the allegations irresponsible and politically motivated. The protests were in opposition to the Bush administration's new overtime regulations. More than 200,000 postcards and petitions were delivered to the campaign offices. The Bush campaign letter also alludes to recent incidents where guns were fired at campaign offices in West Virginia, Tennessee, and Florida, but does not directly blame the AFL-CIO for the shooting incidents.
As the presidential election looms closer, Americans' prosperity has become a central campaign issue. A new report by the Working Poor Families Project throws new light on a highly charged debate. More than one quarter of all U.S. workers are paid poverty wages, and 20 million children live in families that don't earn enough to meet basic needs, according to a new report entitled Working Hard, Falling Short. Brandon Roberts, co-author of the report, says there's a huge and growing disparity between America's low-income service labor force and businesses' demand for highly skilled workers. He says there needs to be a coordinated effort between states and the federal government on programs that help low-wage workers.
9.2 million working families are low-income. These are families that are struggling to make ends meet and to advance to the middle class.
Robert says raising the minimum wage is one simple measure that could immediately lift some of the financial burden off the backs of working families.
The AFL-CIO has asked its members to oppose an amendment to the Michigan State Constitution that would ban same-sex marriage. Michigan AFL-CIO President Mark Gaffney calls the amendment a cynical and divisive ploy. He adds that the labor organization also opposes the measure because it would take away benefits that have already been negotiated into union contracts. The proposed amendment would define marriage as between one man and one woman and altogether bar recognition of domestic partnerships. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A 71% of likely voters say that outsourcing jobs overseas hurts the U.S. economy. That's according to a recent poll conducted by Zogby International for the Foreign Policy Association. Their survey also reveals that 62% of likely voters believe the U.S. government should tax or legislate against companies who engage in outsourcing. U.S. labor leaders argue that outsourcing is bad for U.S. jobs, while economists believe U.S. protectionism would be bad for the overall global economy. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Any lies, he just looks you straight in the eye. Any lies, he lies about everything, lies every day. If it weren't for the lies, he'd have nothing to say. He lies, any lies, any lies.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Boy, with that intro, it makes me worry about whatever I'm going to say. He lies, and he lies, and he lies, but... hey, you know, I've spent time trying to represent the Republican view, and I had my neoconservative guest represent the liberal view, or at least try to. I don't know what kind of job we did, but hey, it's part of Liars Election Tuesday. I figure the next 2 weeks are going to be very serious talking about the election, and I just want one last day where, well, we make fun of all the silliness that does go on here. What's interesting is that we see that the candidates are really caricaturing each other, and I gotta say, you're not surprised to find out, that I think Bush is doing it more than Kerry. Let me read to you some of the things that Bush has said, and then read to you the actual quotes that Kerry made, because it's an amazing way to really take a little tiny nugget of truth, spread it with a whole lot of untruth, and try to convince people of something else. Hey, if you want to call in, by the way, toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP. We know that John Kerry talked about the fact that he would like to make terrorism, he would like to fight it until it's no more than a nuisance. He recognizes that you can't ever get rid of all attacks. After all, Timothy McVeigh bombed the Oklahoma building, so you know there always are going to be attacks, but he wants to bring it down to where it's no more than a nuisance level, which in essence is what Israel has also been trying to do, and what George Bush, in effect, admitted in a more contemplative moment when he was being interviewed by Matt Lauer, when he said, you know, we really can't win the war on terrorism. We can just sort of fight it as hard as we can. But now listen to what Bush is saying about John Kerry. He writes that the 1990s is a time when efforts were against terrorists were piecemeal and symbolic. And here's what Bush said. That is the time that my opponent wants to go back to, a time when danger was real and growing, but we didn't know it. A time when some thought terrorism was only a nuisance. But that very attitude is what blinded America to the war being waged against us. Now you see what he does here? He takes John Kerry's comment that he would like to work and fight terrorism so that it's only a nuisance, and then he pretends that Kerry was talking about the 1990s. Of course he wasn't. As I just talked about, Kerry was working to fight the funding of terrorism by groups like BCCI, which at the same time were aiding George Bush. But that, not surprisingly, is not something Bush is going to say on the stump. We also have Bush. We know, of course, Kerry has said he would reserve the right to use preemptive force if necessary. And then Bush says, quote, Senator Kerry's approach would permit a response only after America is hit. This kind of September the 10th attitude is no way to protect our country, unquote. So that's just a lie, right? He lies and he lies and he lies. Liar in chief, right? I mean, Kerry said that if necessary, he would use a preemptive attack. And by the way, while I am generally against preemptive attacks, sometimes they can be necessary. Let's say you have a country like North Korea that is developing a nuclear weapon, and if we have solid intelligence to believe that they're going to hit us, we may have to hit them first. I understand that that may rarely be necessary. Kerry understands that too. He said it clearly. Bush just lies about it. Here's something else Bush has lied about. Bush quoted Kerry as saying September 11th didn't change me much at all. That's Bush's quote of Kerry. This is what Bush says. Kerry's unchanged worldview is obvious from the policies he still advocates. But the interview that Bush was referring to was actually Kerry saying this. Quote, the attack accelerated, confirmed in me the urgency of doing the things I thought we needed to be doing. It was a kind of anger, a frustration, and an urgency that we weren't doing the kinds of things necessary to prevent it and to deal with it. So in other words, Bush is saying, oh, Kerry, 9/11 didn't change him at all. And Kerry's saying, no, because I was concerned before 9/11 about preventing 9/11. And I'm even more concerned after 9/11 about preventing terrorist attacks. So it didn't change me. It just made me even more upset, even more concerned about the possibility of terrorism. How does Bush take that? Oh, well, Kerry said 9/11 didn't change me at all. Here's something else. Bush says that Kerry, quote, spoke with sympathy for a communist dictator in Nicaragua in the 1980s and criticized the democracy movement as terrorism, unquote. Well, we just talked about how Kerry worked hard to find out what the Contras were doing and how they were illegally being funded. Here is the Kerry quotation upon which Bush makes his statement. Kerry said, quote, our foreign policy should represent the democratic values that have made our country great, not subvert those values by funding terrorism to overthrow governments of other countries, unquote. So basically Bush uses that to call Kerry a communist. Really, the list goes on and on and on. You've heard Republicans still say to this day how Kerry tried to cut intelligence spending in the 90s and trying to weaken American intelligence. But they don't like to mention that Vice President Cheney, as defense secretary, opposed more of these programs than John Kerry, as did Bush's choice to head the CIA, Porter Goss. Porter Goss is now head of the CIA. He was in Congress at the time, and he wanted more massive budget cuts of intelligence than John Kerry. So they're not going to mention this kind of stuff. Jeremy in Kansas writes on the blog, was Kerry there enough in the Senate to do anything good? Or was he working on anything when he was missing votes and committee meetings? Jeremy says he hasn't listened in a while, but he thought he'd listen today and get a refill of his BS bucket, as he puts it. Look, Jeremy, it is true. Listen, I believe in telling the truth here. It is true that John Kerry has spent a lot of time on the campaign trail for the last year. But if you take out the last year, his absentee record is very low. He was working very hard in the Senate. You got to remember that the Senate has largely been under the control of Republicans most of this time, and it's hard for a Democrat to get something passed. But we talked about his investigations. We talked about the things that he was doing. And he really doesn't have a bad absentee rate except while running for president. Also, you should know that George Bush, when running for president, wasn't often in the governor's office of Texas. I think Kerry, Bush, whoever runs for president, understands that that is more important than some of the ordinary business they were doing. In fact, I would think it's a lot easier to absent yourself as a senator when you got 99 others than to absent yourself as governor. I think it's only because Texas has such a weak governorship, perhaps, that Bush was able to do it. My point is this. I don't know of a time when Kerry's absence mattered. Maybe you can give me an example. But I don't know of a time when Kerry's vote would have changed something. So I think all this absentee stuff really, it's just a way of avoiding the issues. Dave writes, I would not want the job of being George Bush or of defending anything of his record. All you could do is blame it on Clinton. Well, that's what I did, Dave. I did blame it on Clinton, because that's what the Republicans do. You see, 9/11, they're not going to talk about the summer of attack. They're not going to talk about the Bin Laden determined to attack the United States memo. They're not going to talk about the huge amount of chatter, as they call it, intelligence chatter, up that summer that made John Ashcroft give up flying at all. They're not going to talk about that. They're going to talk about Bill Clinton as if Bill Clinton could have seen 10 years ago or even 2 years ago what was going to happen in a way that George Bush couldn't see just a few weeks before it happened. The answer is Bill Clinton did do a lot. He did stop the Millennium bombing of the Los Angeles airport. And in fact, his advisor, Sandy Berger, told Condoleezza Rice in the only personal meeting they had, the most important thing in your administration is Osama bin Laden. It's Al-Qaeda. It's looking out for him. This should be the largest focus of your administration. Condoleezza Rice has never denied that Sandy Berger told her this, and this was the sole thing on the agenda. He thought it was that important. So Bill Clinton was looking out for terrorism. Bill Clinton was also looking out for the economy. 22 million jobs, that best surplus in American history. Bill Clinton was a time where, yeah, the rich got richer. The rich did very well under Bill Clinton. But the poor and the middle class got richer too. And Republicans, well, they're just blaming everything on Bill Clinton. The whole recession that began in March 2001 under George Bush, they're blaming under Clinton. If you listen to a Republican economic policy, it goes something like this. George Bush Sr., we had a recession, but his policy set Bill Clinton up for the wonderful 8 years of Bill Clinton, and then Bill Clinton so messed up that that's why we had 4 bad years under George W. Bush. It just doesn't make sense. But they're going to blame Clinton for everything, and when it doesn't work, they're just going to mention Clinton's sex life because they understand that, hey, people don't like Clinton's sex life, and it's a great way to take your attention off of what's really going on. So I hope you enjoyed this special Liars Election Tuesday, where I tried very hard to represent a Republican, and my Republican guest tried to represent a Democrat. But the truth is, this election does matter. It's 2 weeks away, and I think you know your own reasons already why you need to support your candidate, one or the other. If you don't, just call in for another Inside Scoop, and we'll talk about it. I'm out to persuade you. We've got 2 weeks left, and I'm out to persuade you that John Kerry should be the next president of the United States. So that's it for today's Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Mark Levine signing off.
He looks you right in the eye, and he lies, he lies.